The topic for today's shiur is halachic disagreement, more of a philosophical topic. And the fundamental question is, how do we reconcile the fact that there are so many disagreements in halacha with the fact that, you know, at least the basic system of Jewish law was given at Sinai to Moshe Rabbeinu, and it's a tradition that's handed down for generations. Now, I take it that anybody who's familiar with the way halacha works and is familiar with even just the Mishnah and the Gemara, you know, it's very clear that the whole system is shot through with disagreements. You open the Mishnayos, you'll see the Chachamim say this, Rabbi Yoshua says that, Rabbi Elazar says this. And so disagreement is very much a part of the basic idea of Jewish law. And this is true for the Gemara, it's true for the Shulchan Aruch. You know, Shulchan Aruch always quotes, a lot of people say, rule this way, other people rule that way. And it's true even for a contemporary psak. You could, you know, ask a rabbi in one community, you'll get one answer. You ask a rabbi in a different community, you'll get a different answer. And so disagreement seems to be almost like a fundamental feature of the system of halacha. Now, I think you'll see as we go through the sources today that different poskim have different views about this, or I say different Rishonim have different views about this. Some think that this is not problematic at all, and they think it's almost like a virtue of the system that there's so much disagreement. And you could tell that that's the way the Mishnayos are structured. The Mishnayos are structured with disagreement being a core component of it. Other Rishonim you'll see think that disagreement is more of a problem. The Rambam, if you read through Mishnah Torah and through the Rambam's Hakdama, the Rambam actually says that one of the reasons why he's writing the Mishnah Torah the way he did was to eliminate the amount and the degree of disagreement in halacha. So whereas the Mishnayos are formulated with, so-and-so says this and so-and-so disagrees, the Rambam actually wrote Mishnah Torah in a way that would at least give the appearance of uniformity and consensus. So the Rambam actually does not record conflicting views, and as often as possible, he tries to minimize disagreement, and he wants to present the system as approaching some form of consensus. So, and the Rambam in his Hakdama says that this is because he thinks that disagreement does violence to a system of law. It's bad for a legal system to have too much disagreement because it undermines the stability of the system. So that's a little bit of the background, and you'll see these views come out as we go through the discussion. So I'll say good morning to Yaakov. I see Yaakov joined us over here. So let's start with a few Gemaras. You'll see different Gemaras seem to take different stands, and then we'll move into a discussion in the Rishonim, and we'll develop three different approaches in the Rishonim to this idea of halachic disagreement. So the first source I want to bring to your attention is a very famous Gemara. Some would say it's worn thin by quotation, so we'll look at it briefly. The Gemara in Bava Metzia on Daf Nun Tesam and Beis, this is the famous story of the Tanur Shel Achnai. So there was a disagreement about a certain oven, whether if you put together the different pieces of an oven in a certain way, is that oven susceptible to tumah? Does it retain its tumah, or is it tahar? It doesn't matter for our purposes what the involved disagreement in Hilchos Tumah and Tahara is, but there was a debate about its status as whether it's tumah or tahar. And the Gemara tells us that there was the following disagreement. Let's see. So the Gemara tells us over here in Daf Nun Tesam and Beis, Rabbi Eliezer had the view that the oven was tahar, and the Chachamim had the opposite view that the oven was tameh. And so they got into a whole disagreement, a fight about the status of the oven. And the Gemara tells us that Rabbi Eliezer basically had decisive arguments, right? He was meishiv al kol tshuva sheba olam velo kiblu haymenu. So I guess he had irrefutable responses to buttress his position, but his adversaries, the Chachamim, did not accept his argument. And he turned to them and he said, Amar lahem im halacha kemosi charev ze yochiach. Rabbi Lazar said, if I'm right, let this tree prove my case. And what happened? Nekar charev mim komo mea amah. So the tree supposedly jumped 100 amos. Some people say it was 4 amos. and that was supposed to be a sign from heaven that his position was correct. Amrulos, the Chacham responded, Ein mevi en raya min acharav. You know, you can't bring a proof from the fact that the boxer tree likes your position, right? It's not admissible evidence to defend your position. So Chazar v'yamar, Eliezer tried a different tactic, and he said, Halacha kimosi amas amayim yochiach. If I'm right, let the spring of water prove my case. Chazru amas amayim l'achoreyem. So the spring of water moved back. So it responded to Rabbi Eliezer's request that it buttress his position, like kind of a sign from heaven. Amrulo, ein mevi'en raya me'amas amayim. So again, the Chachamim didn't like this, and they said, you know, the movement of the water here doesn't bear on the halachic proofs. Chazar v'yamar lehem imalacha kemosi. If the halacha is like me, let the walls of the Beis Medrash do something as a sign that I'm right. Hitu kosle Beis HaMedrash lipol. And the walls of the Beis Medrash started to cave in to show that Rabbi Eliezer was right. And then, I guess Rabbi Yoshua was on the side of the Chachamim, gar behen Rabbi Yoshua. Rabbi Yoshua scolded the walls that were supporting Rabbi Eliezer's position. Amar lehem, like you walls, what do you have to do getting involved with a halachic disagreement? So what happened? You know, the walls kind of remained in a stalemate. They didn't cave in out of respect for Rabbi Yeshua's admonition, but they remained crooked out of deference to Rabbi Eliezer's position that they were at the oven was tameh, that the oven was tahar, and they were supporting his position. So finally, I guess Rabbi Eliezer despaired, and he chazav amar lehem im halacha kemosi, if the halacha is like me, in accordance with me, with my position, min hashamayim yochichu, let there be a clear sign from heaven, yatsa bas kol va'amra, so a voice came out and it said, Malachem Eitzel Rabbi Eliezer Shalacha Kemosa B'chol Makom. A voice came out from heaven and scolded the Chachamim. It said, why are you disagreeing with Rabbi Eliezer? The Halacha should follow Rabbi Eliezer. Amad Rabbi Yeshua Al Ragla V'yamar Lo Bashamayim. Rabbi Yeshua protested. And he said, you know, the Torah is not in heaven to decide. It's up to us to decide. We think Rabbi Eliezer is wrong. And even this Baskel can't shift the Halacha in his direction. The Gemara asks, my Lo Bashamayim he? Amar Rabbi Yirmiya shekvar nitzna Torah mehar Sinai, ein anu mashgichim bevaskol shekvar kasva behar Sinai betorah acher rabim lahatos. The Torah already gives us the methods for adjudicating disputes. The Torah says that disputes should be adjudicated and decided based off following the majority. Here, the majority of the Chachamim disagreed with Rabbi Eliezer, and even if a baskol, even if there's a sign from heaven on Rabbi Eliezer's side, it doesn't matter because the halachically prescriptive way for deciding disputes is to follow the majority. Okay, so that's what comes out of this important Gemara in Bava Metzia. And the Gemara here seems to say that the procedure for deciding halachic disputes is to follow the majority, even if, I guess, the halachically right answer could be in a different direction. Like in this case, where the Baskol was supporting Rabbi Eliezer, and nevertheless, the Chachamim were saying that the right way to decide the case is in accordance with the majority opinion. So that's one very important Gemara. And we'll come back to how the Rishonim use this Gemara to explain the nature of halachic disagreement. But that's the first Gemara I wanted to call to our attention. Does anybody want to raise any quick questions before we move on to the next source? Feel free to either raise your hand, or if you want to just unmute yourself quickly here, you can shout out. This is relatively straightforward and is a very famous Gemara. It doesn't raise too many problems. Okay, so if there are no specific questions. Oh, I see Harold has a hand. Harold, so go for it.
I hope at some point we get to the question of how one gets elected to the Rabbim.
To how you become a member of the Rabbim? It's interesting. Yeah, we'll see one Gemara in Sanhedrin that takes a stand on it. So, I mean, like, who gets to have a voice? Is that your question, Harold?
Yes, I want to elect the Rabbim. Am I permitted to do that?
Yeah, okay, good. So we'll see a Gemara in Sanhedrin that takes a stand on this. That's a nice question. Good, so let's move on if there aren't other hands. The next source is the Mishnah in Adios, Parak Aleph Mishnah Hay. Also a well-known Mishnah. The Mishnah here has a kind of self-reflective question. why is it that the Mishnayos are formulated by summarizing all the different views? Why doesn't the Mishnah just give us the halachic upshot, the actual ruling? Why does the Mishnah contain majority opinions and minority opinions? So the Mishnah says, V'lama mazkir in divrei hayachid bein hamarubin. Why did the Mishnayos list the minority rejected opinions? Hol v'ein halacha ela kedivrei hamarubin, if the halacha really follows the majority. So the Mishnah answers, she'im yira bezdin as divrei hayachid v'yismoch alav, she'in bezdin yachal levatel divrei bezdin chavero ad she'yegadu mena b'chachmo v'minyan. So the Mishnah here seems to say that even though we reject minority opinions, they're still valid for certain courts to rely and to base their opinions on them. So the idea here seems to be that even though there's a procedure for following the rove, it doesn't mean that the minority opinions are totally irrelevant. There's still some halachic basis to rely on those minority opinions, I guess, if the circumstances warrant it. So the Mishnah here thinks that normatively speaking, there's still reason or there's still some validity to the minority view, even if generally speaking, that's not going to determine how we ought to act. So that's this idea here that a bezdin has certain license. Im yer a bezdin as divrei hayachid v'yismoch alav. If a bezdin relies on that view, they're justified in doing so, and another bezdin can't override their decision unless they're gadol menu. See, Marty has a hand, so let's take Marty's hand. Go for it, Marty. You have to unmute yourself. But
one further, the reason why the halacha trends that way is because they were generally in the rabbim.
What do you mean?
No, it's, we say the halacha is like Pesel versus Bisham, except for one or two cases. Or the halacha generally passing like Shmuel versus Rab, or whatever they say. Is that shouldn't be because they were necessarily right or smarter. It should be because presumably they were the rove, because
we're
always be passing by the
rove. Yeah, 100%. That's kind of an interesting thing here. The halacha just says the procedure is to follow the majority view. The majority view is not evidence necessarily of what's like the truer interpretation, right? It's just like a procedural constraint. Is that what you're getting at, Marty?
Well, yes and no. What I'm trying to say is there are statements that we see in the Gemara where it says between these two, Amora and Matanon, the halacha is always or generally or like one of these two, except for the following three cases or four cases.
Right.
Is that just really a restatement of the fact that it so happens that those opinions that Rob or Shmuel had happen to be fortunate enough to have the rest of the people agree with them, and that's where the halacha is like them?
Yeah. The Gemara explicitly says in a few cases that, you know, Beis Hillel, we'll see one Gemara that says Beis Hillel had Rove, they had more people, and that's why the halacha was, halacha follows them. So we'll see that. So it's just, it's just an application of this idea of halacha kirov. Does that answer your question, Marty?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Now I just want to point out
But it's not just that, because there's some things that are decided according to Rav Shmuel. They didn't change their numbers, but it had to do with whether it's dine mamonos or dine nefasho. So yeah, it's not always numbers.
That's a good point. We'll see that here the Gemara makes it sound like, in some places the Gemara makes it sound as if it's just a matter of rov. In other cases, the Gemara seems to say the latest authority is decisive. And as you point out, Yale, in some cases, the Gemara seems to say it has to do with one person's like expertise in a certain realm of law. Like the Rav and Shmuel we follow, I think Shmuel and Mamanis and Rabbi Suri. So that's a good point. But for our interests right now, the point is that there are these, I guess, procedures for deciding who to follow. They're not necessarily based off like who got the interpretation correct. And that's, I think, what's important for our purposes right now. And we'll see some Rishonim build on that idea later on. I just want to point out there's another view in the Mishnayos here that disagrees with this view. So the earlier view said that the reason why the halacha records disagreement is so that we could rely on minority opinions in some instances. There's another view in the Mishnah cited by Rabbi Yehuda. He says, no, the reason why the Mishnah records minority opinions is she'im yomar ha'adam kachani mekubal yomar lo kedivra ish ploni shemata. The reason for recording minority opinions is so that if one person says, oh, I have a tradition, let's say, to rule leniently this way or stringently that way, this gives us an argument against him to say, oh, because you're relying on that minority opinion that's rejected. So it's actually the reason why the Mishnayos records minority opinions is so that we can delegitimize them by showing that they're rejected opinions, not opinions that haven't been entertained. They were entertained and they were rejected by the minority. So we actually have two theories in the Mishnah and Adios as to why minority opinions are recorded. Okay. But clearly the Mishnah and Adios accepts that disagreement is going to be a core component of just the nature of halacha itself. Let's take a look at I think two more Gemaras, and then we'll start going through the commentary of the Rishonim. We have a Gemara in Sanhedrin on Peiches Amud Beis, and this Gemara I think already takes a stand on why there would be disagreement. So the Gemara says, Tanya Amar Rabbi Yosi, Mitchila lo hayumar ben machlokes bi Yisrael. Originally, there weren't any disagreements among the Jewish people. Like there weren't any legal disagreements, or at least there was a very small number of disagreements. Lo hayumar ben machlokes bi Yisrael. Ella, bezdin shel shivim v'yachad yoshvin belishchas agazis. You'd have the high court of 71 that sat in the Beis Hamikdash. Mishnei batei dinen shel esrim v'shlosha. And you'd have two accompanying courts, each of 23. Echad yoshev al pesach harabayis, ve'echad yoshev al pesach azara. So one would stand, one would sit at the opening of harabayis, and one would be at the opening of the azara. So you had three high courts in the Beis HaMikdash, the court of 71 in the Lishkas HaGazis. Then you had a bezdin at the opening of the azara, and then you had a bezdin at the opening of harabayis. And then vishar bat edinim, and then you have these other courts that were scattered in each city of the Jewish people. Okay? And the Gemara tells us, this is why there was no disagreement. If there was any question about Jewish law, right? So if the first thing you would do is you would ask the court that was in your city, in your town, in your jurisdiction. Imshamu, if they had learned the halacha already, Amru lahen, and they would just tell you what their tradition is, what learning they've received on this matter. The imlav bayin lezesh esamach liran. If the court in your town didn't have any tradition on the matter, then you'd go to the next court that was nearby. Im shamu amru lahem, the imlav bayin lezesh al pesach arbayis. So if like the local courts didn't have a tradition on how to rule in these cases, they would bring the matter before the bezdin that was at the opening of Harabayis. Im shamu amru lahem, im lav bayin lezesh al pesach azara. If that court had no tradition, then they would go to the court above it, which was the court that sat at the opening of the azara. The omer, kach derashti, v'kach darshu chaveri, kach lamadati, v'kach limdu chaveri. I guess these different courts would say, this is how we're deliberating on the matter. Or maybe it's just the court at the opening of Harabayis would say before the higher court in the Azara, you know, we are thinking this way, and another member of the court thinks that way. This is what I understood. This is what he understood. How should we rule? So then the higher court in the Azara would say, Im shamu amru lahem, v'im lav elu ve'elu ban l'lishchas agazis. If that court didn't know, they'd go to the highest court, the one of 71 that sat in l'lishchas agazis. They would sit there, after all day, from the Tamin Shel Shachar to the Tamin Shel Ben Harbayim. The lower court would ask the question before them. If this court had a tradition about how to rule, they would tell it to them. The Imlav Omdim Laminyan. If this court did not have a tradition, they would put it to a vote. I mean, they would put it to a vote internally between the members of the 71-person court, and they would decide the halacha. Rabu Hamitamin Timu. Rabu Hamitarim Tiaru, if majority of the court of 71 says it's Tame, then it'll be Tame. If majority said Tahar, Tahar. And so the Gemara tells us there was basically no machlokes so long as this hierarchy of courts prevailed. Because anytime there was disagreement, it would all be brought up to this court of 71. If this court of 71 had a tradition, they would just tell you what that was. And if they didn't, then they would vote on it and they would issue a clear-cut ruling. So there was no real room for disagreement. How then did disagreement arise? Misha Rabu Tamide Shammai v'Hillel Shelo Shimshu called Tzarchan. When the students of Shammai and Hillel didn't study appropriately, because you know they didn't clerk in the best way, right? They didn't serve their teachers to the full extent. That's when Rabu Machlokas B'Yisrael V'Nasas K'Torah K'Shtei Toros. And that's when you started to have all these disagreements amongst the members of Klal Yisrael. So what you get out of this Gemara in Sanhedrin is the idea that, you know, in principle, there really shouldn't be disagreement about any halachic issues. To the extent that there is indeterminacy or uncertainty in the halachic source material, it would be decided by the Sanhedrin HaGadol. And the kind of disagreement that we're familiar with is all just a function of, you know, the students of Shammai and Hillel, who I guess, you know, didn't study the right way. And that's how disagreement became a feature of our system. But ideally, you wouldn't have this. So does anybody have just any thoughts on this Gemara in Sanhedrin? I think the most important thing to take away from this Gemara is that disagreement is a contingent feature of A, the lack of hierarchy amongst the courts, and B, the fact that the students of Shammai and Hillel lo shimshu kol tzarfam, didn't have proper tutelage. Lee has a hand.
And the only thing I would say to that is that there's disagreements in the Chumash already, you know, and with Moshe and Korah, you know, there's a lot of disagreements preceding this, so it kind of seems like a weak argument.
Yeah, that's interesting. There is disagreement in Chumash, but I guess this Gemara could respond by saying, well, at least there was an in principle way for those disagreements to be decided, right? I guess they could be decided by the Bezin of Moshe Rabbeinu, by the Shivim Zkenim. And so I guess we shouldn't be left with disagreement in those kinds of situations. But yeah, it's an interesting point, Lee. I see Mitch has a hand.
Yeah, I get the impression from this Gemara that it wasn't so much a disagreement, but a lack of knowledge. It wasn't like the lower courts it didn't sound like that they didn't really understand what was going on. They just kept on pushing it up to the first court, but it didn't sound like they had a disagreement. Or am I reading it wrong?
Yeah, right. Initially there wasn't any disagreement. Is that your point? They would just bring it was just like uncertainty.
Uncertainties.
Yeah, but notice the Gemara does say that when the uncertainties were brought before the Sanhedrin HaGadol, it wasn't like they always had the answer. If they didn't have a clear-cut answer, they would deliberate and then they would vote on it, right? So it sounds like there could be internal disagreement amongst the members of the Sanhedrin, and they would just issue a decision based off rote, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
Good. Harold has a hand, and then Marty.
Yeah, I think I just wanted to make the point that you made. I don't think this stands to the proposition that there was no disagreement. This is just a restatement of the Rofer rule, because theoretically, the Beth and Agudel could have decided something by a vote of 36 to 35.
Right, so you're saying... Yeah, that's a good point. So you're saying that, of course, there would be disagreement. It was just an institutionalized way to resolve disagreement.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a nice way of putting it, Harold. Okay, good. So we'll see the Ram. We'll see a lot of Rishonim base their views on this Gemara. So we're going to come back to this in a few moments. Let me just make sure there are no other no other hands. If anybody else has a hand, feel free to raise it on the app. Marty has a hand. Marty, you have a hand? Got to unmute.
The fault of the Talmidim of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel presumably was that they didn't pass on the knowledge of the case to kick it upstairs. Because normally, if you didn't know the answer, you kicked it upstairs. They were passing at the lower court without knowing the correct sakalof.
Yeah, it's a little ambiguous as to what exactly the problem of the Talmidim of Shammai and Hillel were, right? It says Shiloh Shimshu.
If they didn't know, they would have followed the rule, unless they didn't know the rule that you're supposed to kick it upstairs.
Right. So you're saying the problem is what? You're saying their problem must have been...
The problem presumably was they assumed that there was a precedent for things in Pasuk without really knowing that there was a precedent. Because Otherwise, if they didn't know, they should have kicked it up to the standard procedure, kick it upstairs till you find
something
you know.
Right. So it wasn't just like a knowledge deficiency. It was like not following the rules on how to adjudicate these disputes, right?
Correct.
Yeah. That could be like Lo Shimshu called Sarchan. It's like, you know, they didn't adhere to the regulations in the proper way, which is like actually consistent with the language, right? As opposed to like, oh, they didn't have the full knowledge. Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, so let's move. I want to get out two other Gemaras before we turn to the formulations in the Rishonim. There's a Gemara in Chagiga and Daf Gimel, Amud Beis, which, and you'll see this in the next source, seems to make a stronger argument as to why we would have such disagreement as part of just the nature of Torah study. The Gemara interprets this pasuk in Koheles, which compares studying Torah to, it says it's studied in groups, bale asupos, in bundles. So the Gemara here says, why is it called bale asupos? Why does the Torah describe halachic study as broken down into groups? So it says, Elu talmidei chachamim sheyoshvin asupos asupos ve'oskim b'torah. This is referring to people who break down into units of Torah study. And what are these units? Halalu mitamim v'halalu mitaharin. Some people would say tameh, other people would disagree and say tahar. Halalu osin v'halalu matirin, halalu postin, halalu machshirin. Right? So you'd have all these discrepancies, all these disagreements. Shema yomar adam heichani lomei Torah me'ata. A person might say, how could I study Torah? Meaning, there seems to be such a plurality of views. What am I actually studying? Or some interpret this to mean, how can the Torah be divine? Talmud Lomar, Kulam Nasnu Meroa Echad. They were all given by one shepherd. El Echad Nasnan, Parnas Echad Amran, Mipi Adon Kalamasin Baruchu. Dechsev Aydaber Elokim Es Kol Hadvar Ma'ela. The idea is supposed to be that even though there's a plurality of views, they all come back to the same source, and God is supposedly the author of Kol Hadvar Ma'ela, all of these things. So the Gemara here is cognizant of the fact that disagreement, halachic disagreement, seems to undermine the unity of transmission. How could it all be given from the Ribono Shel Olam? And the Gemara says, no, it's don't worry about it. Somehow there's a way to reconcile the plurality of views with the singularity of origin. And it's a cryptic Gemara, but we'll see how the Rishonim interpret this in a minute. The final Gemara source that I want to bring to your attention is it's a Yushalmi, but it gets a better formulation in the Masechtos Ketanos. And you see here the Masechtos Ketanos and the Yushalmi is really troubled by the existence of halachic disagreement. And it says the following. Amar Tanchem Bar Chanilai, Ilu Nitzna HaTorah Chatucha, had the Torah been given in decisive decrees, right, in clear-cut prescriptions, lo haisa amidas raglayim lemore shayore, there would be no room for decisors of Jewish law to issue their own decisions. She'im time, yesh mitamim kayotze bo, v'im tiher yesh mitarin kayotze bo. But now that, you know, there's a plurality of views, there's much more room for a decisor to issue his own psakim, because after all, if he declares tamei, there are other people out there who will declare tamei like him. The MTR, and if he thinks that it's pure, you know, there are views that he could rely on. So the Gemara here seems to be pointing out that the discretion that a posek or a decisor of Jewish law has is only feasible given the fact that the Torah wasn't given in this clear-cut way. Had it been given with clear-cut norms and rulings on all cases, then there wouldn't be any latitude for a posek or a dayan to issue decisions on their own. And the Gemara then tries to make sense of this. So Amar Rav Yanai, Torah shenasna HaKadosh Baruch Hu leMoshe, nitzna lo b'arbaim v'tisha panim, tamei uv'arbaim v'tishim panim tahar. The Torah that was given to Moshe was given with 49 reasons, literally 49 faces, for declaring something tameh, and tisha panim tahar, v'uvarbaim v'tisha panim tahar, and also with 49 reasons to declare that same thing tahar. Amar lo, hey chabit, so how are we supposed to, so Moshe said to Hashem, if there are 49 reasons that could go one way and 49 reasons that could cut the other way, how are we supposed to get a unified system of law? Amar lo, rabu hamitamim tame, rabu hamitarim tahar. So Hashem said, oh, if majority of the poskim, if majority views end up being mitame, then you should be mitame. If the majority wants to be mitahar, then you should be mitahar. So this Gemara seems to take a stand and say that even in the form that the Torah was given to Moshe Rabbeinu, it was given not as a system of clear-cut rulings, but almost as like a system of principles that is somewhat indeterminate, that could have reasons cutting one way, and also on the same issue have reasons that cut the other way, with a decision procedure for deciding the law based off Rov. But even in the form that it was given to Moshe, it wasn't given chatucha, it wasn't given with decisive rulings. So that's the last Gemara that I want to bring to our attention. I would say this Gemara is in tension with the sugya that we saw in Sanhedrin. The sugya in Sanhedrin seemed to suggest that halachic disagreement is maybe a function of Talmidim Shloshim Shu called Sarcham. Here, the Gemara seems to suggest that halachic disagreement is a function of the way it was given at Sinai. It was given with this kind of indeterminism. Mitch has a hand. Let's take hand and other thoughts that we have on this. Mitch?
Doesn't Gemara really tell us basically that there's a pedagogical value for the minority opinion? And that's really what he's really trying to get at. It's not just so much the real answer, you know, the halakhic answer, but the pedagogical results that we love, that relate from that back and forth, no?
I mean, it's true. There may be pedagogical utility in the way it's in being structured this way. But I would say that more important than that for our purposes is the fact that this Gemara says that the form of the Torah as given at Sinai was somewhat indeterminate, right? It was given with reasons to be metame, reasons to be metayer, without a decisive upshot on any specific case. Do you agree with that, Mitch?
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, good. I see David has a hand and then Marty, so I'll take David's hand.
Yeah, I don't see these two sources as in tension. I guess the reason is echoing points that have been made earlier that the Gemara in Sanhedrin said that there was a protocol that it was a matter of procedure that you escalated up to the Beis Din HaGadol. But the Beis Din HaGadol would have, as someone said, it could be 36 to 35. There would be different opinions there. There was just a protocol for hashing it out.
Yeah, I agree 100%. It's true that there's no factual disagreement between these two sugyas. I agree that the way to see them as being consistent is that, as you point out, the Gemara and Sanhedrin concedes that there may be disagreement. It's just contained to the Sanhedrin Haggadah, and they issue a ruling based off Rove. Right? That's your point, David?
Yes.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with that. The manner, their intention, if you really just based off the last line of the Gemara, if you read that last line to say that disagreement stems not from, like as Marty said, the procedural issues, but as like Talmidim of Shammai and Hillel, you know, not having learned the tradition in the best way. So you're right, there's no clear-cut disagreement. I would say the disagreement is going to be, as some Rishonim read that Gemara, to say that really there was unanimity at some point, and most of the disagreement that we have comes from like a deficiency in our knowledge of the received tradition because the students of Shammai and Hillel didn't pass it down in the right way. But I agree with your point 100%. Okay, Marty has a hand.
Based on this last Gemara, as well as the Gemara that gave the reason why we report minority opinions is to delegitimize it, what allowed the Talmidim of Beis Shammai to follow the Pesach of Beis Shammai after it was already accepted as Halacha Kaveisilo?
It's interesting. You're saying how...
Because we know Beis Shammai's Talmidim followed this Halacha.
Right, all right. I think we'll...
On what basis could they do that once we say Halacha Karabim, and the halacha was like Beis Hillel.
Right, so you'll see that there's going to be some views that think that Pesach is going to take on a local valence, such that when we say Achrei Rabim Lahatos, it's because there's no centralized Bezdin, it's going to be decentralized to every jurisdiction. So, you know, within like Shammai's place, it's like Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel don't occupy the same territory anymore. And Achei Rabim Lahat.
There was a Sanhedrin during their time.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. You'll see. Wait till we see. We're going to talk a little bit about this idea from Rav Moshe. So I think he's gonna get to this idea of the locality of Psak. But I think you're right that if Achei Rabim Lahatos is across Klal Yisrael, then it should apply. Talmidim of Shammai should be bound by Hillel, right? Unless maybe that's also what the Gemara means, like Lo Shimshu called Sarcham. But I'm not sure. Yeah. Okay. So I want to turn now is to the three views in the Rishonim about how to make sense of halachic disagreement. So the first view is what's sometimes called the Shita of the Gaonim. We'll see here, we're going to talk about two sources, the Sefer HaKabbalah of the Ravid HaRishon. The Ravid HaRishon is not the Ravid who wrote the Hasagos on the Rambam. The Ravid HaRishon is Sfardik, Ravram Ibn Daud. I put a little bio here. He was born in Cordoba, same place as the Rambam, in the 12th century, early 12th century. He wrote some books on Jewish history, which is what we're going to look at now, and he wrote a work on Jewish philosophy. In this work, the Sefer HaKabbalah, he writes basically like a history book describing all the centers of Jewish learning in Spain, in France, how the Gaonim came about. So it's like a Sefer HaKabbalah, meaning not mysticism, but the book of tradition, meaning describing where each school of Jewish thought came from and where they received their traditions from. And what he's trying to show here is that, Torah Shbal Peh was handed down from generation to generation, from school to school, up until his own day. The theory that we're interested here in his writing is that he seems to say that there's not going to be fundamental machlokas, there can't be disagreement about the core parts of Torah. To the extent that there is disagreement, it's a function of the Mesorah not being handed down properly. And that's why he thinks that disagreement will be more on the details of certain laws, not on fundamental features of those laws, because he thinks it's unlikely that there would have fallen that there would be problems of transmissions when it comes to like the basic halachos. So let's take a look at this, the formulations in the Sefer HaKabbalah. Amar HaChacham, Tiferes HaYisharim Rabbeinu Halevi ben David, that's the Ravid, Zeh Seder HaKabbalah Kasavnuhu Lahodiyah L'Talmidim, Ki Chol Divrei Rabboseinu Chachmei HaMishnah VaHaTalmud, Kulam Mikubalim, Chacham Gadol V'Tzadik Mipi Chacham Gadol V'Tzadik. Rosh Yeshiva Visayasa, Mipi Rosh Yeshiva Visayasa, Ad Anche Knesset Hagadol Shekiblu Me'anavim, Zechar Kulam Levracha. So what he wants to say here is that everything that's in the Mishnah, everything that's in the Talmud are all received traditions. One scholar from another scholar, one Rosh Yeshiva from another Rosh Yeshiva, going back to the Anche Knesset Hagadol who received it directly from the Nevi'im. Okay? Ula olam chach me haTalmud v'kol shekein chach me haMishnah, afilu davar katan lo amru milibam. The scholars of the Talmud and the scholars of the Mishnah themselves never would have said any halacha, any law, from their own intuition, from their own ideas. Chutz min haTakano shetiknu b'haskamas kulam kedei lasos siag laTorah, except for if these were like rabbinic decrees to make a fence around the Torah. But everything you see in the Talmud is really handed down from person to person. Now, obviously, this is a difficult view to defend when you see that there's so much disagreement, right? If everything is handed down going back to the Nevi'im, then why is there disputes in the Talmud? V'im lach sheikh adam sheyesh bo reach minus lomar mipnei shenechoku b'kama mekomos. If someone turns to you and says, wait a second, how could the Talmud be all received tradition? After all, nechelku b'kama mekomos, there are a bunch of machloksim, and therefore I doubt that this could be a received tradition, because if it was a received tradition, there shouldn't be machloksim anymore. After all these cases were, I guess, either told to us by Moshe Rabbeinu, or they were decided by the Sanhedrin. Af ata hake eshinav, you should blunt this person's teeth, right? So it's a nice Pesach connection over here, like we do to the Russia. V'hodi'ehu, shehu mamr al pi bezdin, v'shelo nechelku razal la'olam b'ikra mitzvah. Chazal never had fundamental disagreement about the main parts of the mitzvos, ela bitoldo seha, only on like some of its details or derivatives, sheshamu ikra me'rabo sehem, because these students heard the main parts of the mitzvah from their rebbeim, v'lo shaldo mal toldo seha, and they forgot to ask about some of the details, mipnei shelo shimshu kol tzarchem. Note that that's a phrase that's borrowed from the Gemara that we saw in Sanhedrin about the students of Shammai and Hillel. So he's saying disagreement only comes about because of students who didn't properly receive the transmission, because they didn't serve their teachers in the right way, they weren't good pupils. And that's where disagreement arises from. Kayotze bedavar, lo nechelku imadlikin ner b'shabbis, imlo, there's no disagreement whether we light candles on Shabbos, the only machlokas is about what kind of wicks and what kind of oil we can use. Same thing for, there's no disagreement about whether to say Shema, there's only disagreement about exactly at what time and how to say it. And so he says, and so for all of disagreements, all of these disagreements only come about through, students not following up with their teachers on the details of a mitzvah. But it sounds like he wants to say, in principle, if every student fully served their teacher and received the tradition in full from them, there wouldn't be room for halachic disagreement. So anybody have thoughts on this idea of the Sefer HaKabbalah of Rav Rami ben Daud? It seems, at least the way he's interpreted, is that in principle there shouldn't be disagreement in halacha. We should all have the same system that goes back all the way to Moshe Rabbeinu. And the reason why we have disagreement is because of problems, disruptions in the chain of the Masorah. Anybody have thoughts on this? We'll see a similar view. Feel free to raise your hand. We'll see a similar view brought up in the Geras Rav Shri Ragon. And the Sefer HaKabbalah is very influenced by Rav Shri Ragon. But let me first take Marty's hand over here. Marty? Let me see. I have to unmute you. You should be able to unmute yourself.
I'm sorry. He's saying that basically all of halacha was pre-decided, and we just lost some of the nuances, as opposed to speculating that halacha is a group of principles that are then supposed to be applied, and since they can be applied in different ways, we might get different results.
Right, right. It sounds like he's not saying it's like new application that creates disagreement. He's not saying it's some initial indeterminacy in the way the halacha was given down. He seems to be saying, yeah, everything was given and there should be a right answer for all questions, but there was like this disruption in the chain of the Masorah. That's the sense that you get from him. Do you want to follow up, Marty?
So for example, is my posting of Sukkah more than 10 amos, less than 4 thoughts and all that? He's basically saying that was all known. And we just didn't remember, and now we're looking for Sukkim or basis to figure out why it should be okay or we're not be okay
yeah.
In those extreme bases.
That's very much what it sounds like. Yeah.
Yeah.
Willie, you wanna follow up with a comment? Billy, you wanna follow up with a comment? We just gotta unmute you. Billy, you have to unmute yourself and then.
Was he saying that everything should be one way, but the students themselves didn't really understand it? If you play the game of telephone, things after you transmitted a couple of generations, they're just different ways to understand it. Doesn't mean that they didn't know what was that they learned it improperly. Just that different things transpire over periods of time.
That's right. I'm not sure which one of those he wants to say. I mean, he does lean in for the idea that lo shimshu kol tzarchem. So he does think that there was some problem with the way the students didn't fully receive the tradition. So you're right. I guess you're saying even if like the students were as good as possible, there shouldn't be there might still be disruptions. But he seems to blame the students for it. Yeah, it's an interesting point.
The other question is why are they seem to be troubled that there are differences? Doesn't seem to trouble me that there are differences of opinions. And how to do certain things.
Yes, I think for the reasons that Marty said, that his picture of revelation is that, you know, Revelation gave us the answer to everything, and that everything was handed down from generation to generation, so implicitly we shouldn't have disagreement. But then, you know, what happened is that students didn't receive the right tradition, they passed it on the wrong way, and that's how we ended up with these disagreements. Yeah, so it's a very strong view about the content of Revelation. Let me just point out that Sri Ragone in his letter here has a similar theory, and that's probably where the Sefer HaKabbalah gets it from. He says, you should know, here, he says the reason why we don't know, so there's like a whole part of the early Jewish history, but that we're not told the names of the Chachmei HaMesorah. And he says, the background is Rav Shira Gaon wrote this letter to explain to the Chachamim in Kerwan, to North Africa, about how the Mishnah was written, how the Gemara came about, the role that each generation played in the composition of the Gemara. So it's definitely worth your time, to read through this Igeres, this letter of Rav Shira Gaon. Rav Shira Gaon, by the way, gave us a little bio here at the end. Rav Shira Gaon lived, he was born in 906. And he died in the year about 1006. So he lived a ripe old age, from the 10th century to the beginning of the 11th century. He was one of the last Gaonim in Bavel, in Pompidisa. Rav Shira Gaon was of Haigon's father. So in this long letter, he tells us that for many generations, people didn't write down the names of the their rebbeim, of the people who were issuing these authoritative statements. The reason why Rav Shira Gaon gets into this question is because if you read the Mishnah, it says, oh, Rabbi Akiva says this, Rabbi Yeshua says that. And those are very late authorities, right? So it makes it seem as if the disagreement is really only coming about amongst these more recent commentators. Rav Shira Gaon says, the content of the Mishnayos really dates back much earlier. He says, "V'hachi havin milsa derishonim lo es yadu shemasehun, ella shemosam shel nesiim shel avos bezin bilvad." There wasn't really a record of who said what for many generations, because mishum delo hava machlokes beinehem. Because for many generations there was no real halachic disagreement. Ella kol taime de oraisa hava yadin lahon yediyah brura. Everybody knew the de oraisas with clear knowledge. For many generations, it was just no disagreement because everybody had clear knowledge of it. He says, but then, and he says, yeah, and the kama dehavas beis hamikdash kayim kol chad v'chad merabusa have a migmar luhu l'talmide taimei oraisa de mishnah v'talmuda. And for generations, they would just pass on this undisturbed body of knowledge from master to student, master to student. And there were very few disagreements. He says you could count all the disagreements on one hand. You know, there's one disagreement about leaning on Karbanos. There were three disagreements between Shammai and Hillel themselves, not their students, but amongst themselves, only three disagreements. But then he says, V'kivan shecharav beis hamikdash v'azal lebeitar, v'charav nami beitar v'izbadi rabban l'chol tzad, after the decentralization of the Jewish institutions, and the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, and then Beitar was destroyed, and the Rabbanon disbanded. Umishum hanach mehumos ushmadim v'shibushim shehayu ba'osa azman lo shimshu hatalmidim kol tzarchan v'nafishu machlokes. Machlokes came about because it was very difficult for these students to receive proper training given the kinds of persecutions that they were undergoing. And that's when halachic disagreements in this more robust fashion came about. And that's why Machlokes is more of a recent component of Jewish history, not really an earlier part, not part of the earlier history when, I guess, the centralized institutions of Jewish learning were around. So I think Rav Shira Gaon has a very similar picture to the Baal Sefer HaKabbalah that we saw earlier. Okay. That's one important view about disagreement. Does anybody want to just make a comment about it or have questions about it before we move on to the next two views? Billy has a question.
Why couldn't it also be that new circumstances arose that never were discussed before?
Yeah, that's
clearly Hanukkah, Megillah, I mean, those are, you know, obvious ones. that were never discussed before. So it could be that things of Tum and Taro were never discussed before.
Yeah. You know, I think that's similar to what Marty was saying earlier, and, you know, there's new new conditions, and I see Harold has a comment like that on the discussion board also, that new situations would give rise to new questions. I guess one way to defend the Gonim here is that they're thinking that if the principles are sufficiently clear, then there shouldn't be disagreement about how to apply them. You know, conservatives like to say this about the Constitution. I think, you know, Gorsuch and Kavanaugh, you know, in their confirmation hearing say, oh, you know, the law doesn't change. You know, we just apply the principles to new circumstances. You know, it's not like new circumstances require a rereading of the law. It's just straightforward application of the underlying principles. So I think you might say, like, they could say something like that over here. Like, if you fully understood the halachic principles, then there would be no problem in applying it to even new circumstances. Yeah, it's a good point, really, Billy. Marty, you have a comment?
Yeah, Rav Shmuel Gaon's a little optimistic, because from a historical perspective, if you go back to times in the Diem when you have Malchei Yehuda who were, you know, letting the people sacrifice the Bamos, and they were shocked when they found the Yoshio's car in Sefer Dvarim, which they hadn't lost. It wouldn't be hard to imagine they lost other Mesorah Halachas.
Right.
They didn't even know Sefer Dvarim.
Yeah, definitely optimistic. But that's the theory that he wants to push. And what's nice about it is that it says there was like a huge body of Mesorah of revelation that was just handed down for generations. So he's very pro on the content of revelation.
I mean, there were times that the Kohen Gadol wasn't even a real person.
Right, right. So you're saying it's overly optimistic to say that everything was kosher until the end of Bayesheni and Beitar. Yeah. Okay, we have Mitch, did you have a hand up? Did I?
This is Yale, and I think Marty's point is that they were not observant. That's not the same as saying there was a difference of opinion about halacha.
Well, I'm saying is that they didn't even know the halacha at that point. So it wouldn't be surprising if 500 years later they come up with halacha and people have different opinions about it.
Right.
The chain was broken, in other words.
No Masorah, yeah. Right? It's no Masorah.
Right. Oh, Howard, I'm sorry. Howard, Harold points out to me that I misread your comment as Harold's comment. So, Howard, I ask him, Mechila. It's really Howard's comment, not Harold's. So we apologize, Howard. But yes, thank you for the thanks for the comment.
That's okay. I don't know how to raise my hand.
Okay. Under participants, you'll see there's a way to, like, hand raise if you click on participants. But yeah, the written comments are also good, so thank you. Okay, good. So Marty, you got your Marty. You have a further hand, or this is your original hand?
No.
Okay. So I'm going to go on here. This is the Gonim's view. The Rambam has a very different view, and the Rambam is motivated. The Rambam's upset, and this is something we've seen in the past. The Rambam's concerned that he doesn't like the idea that there should be any machlokas about things that were handed down at Sinai. He thinks that does violence to the transmission of the Mesorah. So I guess Marty was saying that the Gaonim were overly optimistic about how long the tradition, the transmission of the content of Revelation went on for uninterrupted. But the Rambam actually wants to go further, and the Rambam wants to say that there couldn't be any disruption with respect to the transmission of the content of Revelation. So look what the Rambam does here. The Rambam in his Hakdama to Perish to the Mishnah, the Rambam has a nice, long, extensive overview of the system of the Torah and how it was transmitted. And the Rambam wants to say the following. He says, look, Rabbi Anasi took all the discussions and traditions that he heard, and he put them all into the Mishnah. And he says, you have to distinguish between two different things. There are certain things that were traditions going back to Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay? And he says, anything that was a tradition going back to Moshe Rabbeinu, ein bohen machlokas. There's no disagreement when it comes to the traditions going back to Sinai. The things that there are disagreement about are with respect to lemidios. These are things that are derived from the laws of the Torah, but that were not directly given in Revelation. V'kav'am kefi machloksam ploni amar kach v'ploni amar klach. The things that there are disagreement about in the Talmud are not those things that were given at Sinai. It's only with respect to derivations, lemidios, extractions, derivations, analogies, further principles that were derived from the mitzvos that were given at Sinai. But the Rambam wants to say there can't be disagreement about the core content of what was revealed. And he says here, look, some people want to say, Im hayu pirushe haTorah mikubala mimoshe kefi aklalim she'amarnu, kol haTorah nemru klalosel pratosel v'diktukeh b'Sinai, if it's true that everything was given in its details at Sinai, Im kein mahin osan ha'halachos hamyuchado she'amru behen halacha l'moshe mi'Sinai. Rambam says, look, there's a tension between two different ideas. One idea is that everything was given at Sinai, and the other is that there are specific halachos for which we say these are a halacha l'moshe mi'Sinai. So there has to be a distinction between these, right? What's the difference between the cases where the Gemara explicitly attributes something as halacha l'moshe mi'Sinai and this broader idea that all of the Torah was given at Sinai? So the Rambam tells us that there are really two different categories. The Rambam says there are received traditions that were Moshe explicitly gave over at Sinai. On those things, ein bahen machlokes kal. Hapirushim hamekubalim Moshe, ein bahen machlokes kal. Lefi she'ad achshav lo matzanu she'nafla machlokes bein hachachamim b'shum zman min hazmanim mimoshe Rabbeinu ad Ravashi. So the Rambam wants to say, from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu until the end of the Gemara, there was never any disagreement about a principle that was given over directly to Moshe at Sinai. And he's very adamant about this. On what things are there disagreement? So the Rambam says that the disagreement is only with respect to Mido Shehatorah Nidrash Esbahem. That sometime, a lot of things weren't given directly at Sinai. The Torah gave us certain hermeneutic principles, like extracting things through a Kal V'Chomer. It's when Chazal used those principles to extract new dinim, on those things there arose disagreement. He says, Achelak HaShlishi, which is separate from the things that were given at Sinai, Heim HaDinim SheNilmedu Ba'achas HaMidos, things that are derived through the Midos HaTorah Nidrashes Behem, Uvahem Nofelas Machlokas Kemosha Amarnu, V'Nifzak Behen HaDin Kedas HaRov Ufli HaKlalim SheHikdamnu. So the Rambam wants to say that this is where disagreement arises, when we use these principles to extract new halachos. And the Rambam actually wants to say that anybody who thinks that there could be disagreement on the content of Revelation at Sinai, svaras misha choshev shekam adinim sheyesh b'machlokas kabbalah mimosha, Rambam says, hinei ze chai Hashem davar meguna u'muzar me'od. It's problematic and strange. V'hu davar bilti nachon, v'lo matim leklalim. It's just, it's incorrect, and it's against logic. V'choshed ba'anoshim shemehem kibalnu es haTorah, v'choze batal. And it puts the people from whom we receive the Torah under suspicion that they didn't pass the Torah on correctly. So the Rambam says, the way to deal with this is to distinguish again between the klalim hamikubalim. The actual principles that were given at Sinai are not disputed at all. There's no disagreement. And the new principles that we create through applying the Yud Gimel Midos to the Torah to extract new rules, and that's where there's disagreement. The Rambam then makes one further point here, and then we'll take some comments. The Rambam then says, when the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us that disagreement comes about through the students of Shammai and Hillel not properly serving their masters, the Rambam has to offer an explanation for this. Right? Recall, for the Gaonim, it's very easy to understand this Gemara. The disagreement comes about through people messing up the transmission of the tradition that was given at Sinai. That's how the Gaonim understood it. The Rambam wants to hold there can't be disagreement about that part of the revelation. And so he has to understand this Gemara in a different way. And so he says, It means the following. Two people who have equal intellects, shavim behavana uve'iyun uvidiyas haklolim shalom demehem, they have equal intellects and they have equal knowledge of the principles for interpreting the Torah. Lo tia b'neiam machlokes b'ma shalom dim ba'achas hamidos b'shem panim. So the idea is like if we all know the rules of mathematics in the same way, we'll always get the same, we'll all get the same results. The Rambam then says the disagreement comes about. And so in principle, if we all understood the Yud Gimel Midos, the rules for interpreting the Torah in the same way, and we all had the same intellectual capability, we would never have disagreement in applying and interpreting these new rules. The im tia muetes, kemo shalom atzanu machlokas ben Shammai v'Hillel, ela b'halachos achtos. Lefisha darke limudam b'chol masha hayulomdim oso ba'achas hamidos hayu krovim ze leze. Degam haklolim hanechonim shahayu etel ze hayu etel hasheni. He says, so long as people knew these Yud Gimel Midos well, there wouldn't be disagreement even in their application and in the derivation of new principles. Disagreement came about from the Talmidim who didn't fully understand how to apply the Yud Gimel Midos, and their students had unequal intellects, right? Lefisha Seichel, Shekol Achad Mehem Don Lefi Koach Sichlo, Lefi Akolim Hayiduim Lo. And he said this is not their fault because, you know, I guess the level of intelligence fell off after the times of Hillel and Shammai. And these people started to apply the Yud Gimel Midos in an unequal way, and that brought about halachic disagreement. So for the Rambam, the key takeaways here is that against the Gaonim, he wants to say there can't be disagreement on the core content of revelation. Disagreement comes about through applying the Yud Gimel Midos to interpret the Torah to get new principles. And even on these, in principle, the derivations for people with equal intellect and equal knowledge of the Torah, they should all arrive at the same results. But the students of Shammai and Hillel started to have unequal intellects and unequal knowledge of the principles, and that's where disagreement came about. I see Harold has a hand.
So just to ensure I understand what the Rambam is saying, would he say that unless the Talmud explicitly says that something is halakha l'moshe m'Sinai, it is not?
Yes, that's correct. The Rambam does say that. The Rambam says, the Rambam says that the only those things that the Talmud explicitly says are Mesoros from Moshe Rabbeinu are Mesoros from Moshe Rabbeinu. And Harold, to take your point further, that it follows from the Rambam's claim that there cannot be disagreement about the content of Revelation at Sinai, that the content of Revelation is much smaller than we would otherwise think. Right? As a lot of commentators here point out, we'll see one formulation right now, and then I'll take David's hand. The Chavos Yair in Simen Kuf Tzadi Beis says that the Rambam thought that he was building a fortified wall around Torah Sheba'al Peh, right? The Rambam thought that he was doing a service to Torah Sheba'al Peh by saying that whatever was given at Sinai is perfectly preserved, meaning against the Gaonim who acknowledge that there's some corruption in the transmission. Right? The Rambam thought he was doing a good thing, he says, but afki yatza schar behefsid. But there's a huge cost to the Rambam's theory. It follows that most of the things in the Talmud are not from Sinai. After all, they're disputed. And on the Rambam's theory, there can't be disputes about the content of Sinai revelation. So the Chavos Yair's counterargument is that, sure, you did a service to Torah Sheba'al Peh by saying there's no corruption in what was given at Sinai, but then it just follows that very little was actually given, and most of the stuff in the Talmud is later derivations through the Yud Gimel Midos. Is that what you're
getting? Chavos Yair is saying that there can be reasonable disagreement even as to that which, as to whether something is indeed halacha l'moshe m'Sinai.
Well, yeah, I think he's kind of, in this passage, he's sort of defending the Gaonim's view, and because he finds the Rambam's view implausible. Right, he thinks it sacrifices too much in limiting the scope of what is given at Sinai. Yeah. David has a hand, and then Marty.
Yeah, I was just going to ask a sort of technical question, which Howard might have just alluded to, which is the Rambam says there cannot be a dispute about a halacha Moshe Nisinai. Does that necessarily include the premise, the statement that can there be a dispute whether or not something is a halacha Moshe Nisinai?
It doesn't sound like it. It doesn't. The Rambam seems to think that there's just a uniform agreement on the content of Revelation, because he says he thinks it's too difficult of a proposition to swallow, that the Chachmei HaMasorah didn't ensure its proper transmission over generations.
Because do you never have in Shas a machlokas where it ends up boiling down to one person says, it's halacha Moshe Nisinai, and one person says it's not?
Yeah, you'll see. I mean, the Rambam doesn't talk about those. The Ramban, in his Hasaga to the second Shoresh, tries to adduce as many of those cases as he can. But the Rambam doesn't have anything to say about it explicitly.
But in other words, yes, there are instances where in Shas where that happens.
There are instances where the Gemara will say, "Oh, this person says that," and then, "Oh, but it's halacha Moshe Nisinai." So I don't think the Gemara explicitly will say that the machlokes is about whether it's a halacha Moshe Nisinai, but you could infer from context maybe that at least one possible interpretation is that they're disagreeing about whether it is. I don't recall offhand if there are any explicit cases where the Gemara said they're debating the fact of the matter as to whether it was given at Sinai. Do you know any offhand, or?
No, I feel like there are, but I certainly don't know any offhand.
Yeah, but either way, the Rambam doesn't mention anything about it. I just want to point out before I take Marty's hand that the Rambam actually says that even Moshe Rabbeinu, he himself extracted new principles from the Torah. He says, based off an interesting Gemara in Temura, he says that Moshe Rabbeinu himself had some teachings that were given to him by Hashem directly, and then other teachings he extracted through Kal Vachomers and reasoning. And so even within the content of the Torah that was given over to Moshe, there were these two different kinds of content. So let's take Marty.
Interestingly creates a category of halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai and the second category of halacha l'moshe.
Yeah, that's right. The Rambam bases himself here off a Gemara in Temura. Here, look at this. Rambam bases himself off a Gemara in Temura that says when Moshe died, thousands of halachos that were derived through Kal Vachomers were forgotten. And so the Rambam says, you see from here that Kol Masha Yotzi Adam Him Anafim and Asherashim Shenemer Lo Moshe Misinai. Anything that we extract through these principles are like they're branches off the roots that were given to Moshe at Sinai. Vafilu haya hamotzi Moshe ba'atzmo ein roi limnosan. And even if Moshe Rabbeinu was the one who derived the Kal Vachomer, they wouldn't count as mitzvos that were given at Sinai. And he brings this proof from Temura that thousands of mitzvos that were derived through Kal Vachomers were forgotten when Moshe died. And he says, Hine nizbar l'cha sha'afilu bimei Moshe nemar dikduke sofrim. Ki chol ma shelo shamu b'sinai bevir hine humi divrei sofrim. Even in Moshe's own day, there was a difference between things that he received from Sinai and things that he and, I guess, his co-Zakanim extracted through the Midos. Yeah. So the Rambam, that's right, Harold. The Rambam does distinguish between those two categories. Okay, so let's take Marty and then Yale.
Yeah, vis-a-vis Harold's comments also, we learned previously that what the Rambam says, me divrei sofrim, is not really something that's a Rabbana. It's really that which was figured out through the Yud Gimel Midos, no?
Yes, that's exactly right. And that's what the Rambam here is saying. It's the Midivrei Sofrim could be these kind of extractions through the Yud Gimel Midos that are like branches coming out of the roots. The roots being what was given at Sinai.
So the only question I have, though, is in general, the Gemara considers Gzeira Shava is Moshe, Mi-Sinai.
Yeah. That's one of the things that the Ramban here goes crazy against the Rambam about. The Ramban says it's just not true the Ramban says, look, there are tons of things that are learned through the Yud Gimel Midos that the Gemara assumes are just d'oraisa in the same way. But the Rambam here might respond that there could be two different levels of Doraisa. So there's Doraisa in the strict sense of content of revelation given at Sinai, and then Doraisa in a weaker sense of this, like, anafim min hashorashim. Like, they're Doraisa because they were extracted from, you know, the content of revelation.
You could almost interpret the Rambam ex post facto saying anything we have machlokas on, the reason why we have machlokas is because presumably that wasn't an original Doraisa.
Yeah.
Anything we don't have machlokas on, that must be because it was an original Doraisa.
I think that's exactly right. I think that's part of what the Rambam's doing here, 100%. Okay, Yale.
Is there a strong difference between the Rambam and the Gaon of Vilna? In other words, whether there's a deficiency of intellect or negligence of effort of pursuing or maintaining the Masorah.
It's interesting. I mean, there are similarities in that both attribute machlokas to, I guess, deficiencies in transmission and knowledge. The main point of disagreement is that the Gaonim have a much more robust sense of what was given at Sinai, and they say that the disruption in transmission was just because of, it seems like it wasn't given over in the right way or wasn't received properly. The Rambam has a little more of a complicated theory where the content of revelation is smaller. So it's just those things that were given directly at Sinai, things that are not disputed. And disagreement also comes about through students not being as smart or not fully understanding how to apply the principles of derivation. But it's not because of like a failure to hand over knowledge. The Rambam thinks that that's just not plausible. Like, we could all give over the content of revelation easily. It doesn't take a great mind to do that. Where the disruption came about is in applying these hermeneutical principles of, you know, how to make a proper analogy, how to do a gzeir shava, how to have a kavachomer. That's where the disruption comes about. Does that make sense, Yael?
Yes.
Okay, good. Good.
But they're not that far apart.
Well, yeah, well, they're...
Maybe they are. Okay.
Yeah, right.
I can find the common ground.
Groups. Yeah. David.
Yeah, I have two hopefully pretty quick questions. One is, according to the Gaonim, what is the conceptual difference between, like, why is there even this category of Yigyon Vidosha Torni Dreshes for him? It's all just sort of like backdoors to Halakha, effectively Halakha and Moshe Messina. One, Hashem directly taught it, and one, he told you the route to get there, and you just get there anyway. It's just like a little bit less direct.
So
what's like the point of it is my first question.
Yeah, that's interesting. I guess he might say that, you know, the content, it's almost like the content was given and like the way it's extracted was given. So it's like the Torah gave both like the substantive subject matter and the method for showing how it's part of the Torah.
But why isn't it all just noise? Like, it's, according to the Gaonim, it's just a bunch of like noise how you get there, like whether he said it, you know, with words or with a picture or with some kind of cloud protocol. It's all just a bunch of like, at the end of the day, he told you an ironclad way to get to only X result and no other result. So why does it really matter? Isn't it just noise?
I don't see why can't they say that it is just noise, meaning the Torah gave you the legal upshot. And it gave you this important way of showing, like, to others how it's embedded in the Torah.
Right, but sometimes it did that, and sometimes it just told you the upshot. And what's the difference? Why does it matter? Why, in some cases, one will take it to the other? Is it just, like, what significance is there to focusing on the way that it got there? We just care how we got there.
Right.
Like, there's no nafkamina, there's no conceptual real difference.
I think the Gaonim would say that, you know, maybe in all cases there was Yud Gimel Midos involved in showing how it's in the Torah. So there really isn't a difference. And why sometimes in the Gemara it's presented as such, maybe there are just, you know, contingent reasons about what was remembered exactly. But in principle, that's right. Maybe everything could be extracted through the Yud Gimel Midos.
Oh, okay.
That's what I think they would say. But that's my sense on Regel Acha. So it's not like there are some things that are direct and some things that are through Yud Gimel Midos.
Could the Nafka Mina be the punishment for the violation? might there be a different punishment for something that's actually written in the Torah or Halacha L'Moshe B'Sinai?
So that
between something that's derived that, in another fashion.
That's very much a Rambam view. The Rambam wants to say things like that, and you see it in the Rambam in a few places. I'm not sure that the Gaonim have that. But certainly in the Rambam, precisely because he sees there as being this like very important ontological difference between the content of revelation and the stuff that's derived, he thinks, yeah, Mefurish Bakra, or you know, given over Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai, could have different kinds of punishments, different kinds of halachic rules. But I don't think the Gaonim have that. But I'd have to double check in like in kind of all the sugyas to see if that holds up. Yale, do you still have a hand, or is this your old hand?
I had one other quick question.
Yeah, go for it, David.
So interesting that the Rambam, that last part we read, which was different than I had always understood it. So basically now there's meaning. I agree, that's what he said, but I didn't realize. So now it turns out there's nobody who holds Rishon level person who holds that. When there's Yigo Mamidosha throwing the Dreshes Mehem, there's multiple truths. They're both valid or sort of a priori equally valid, and it just that there needs to be a halacha, so we take a vote. But even the Rambam holds that one of them is kind of wrong and one of them is kind of right. And there is no view out there that says they're all true.
So we're gonna see the third view in a minute, the Ramban school. That's the last view that we're gonna see. But yeah, the Rambam, you know, he makes that surprising move, which is what I take it you're referring to say that if in principle we all understood the Yud Gimel Midos in the right way, and our knowledge was, our minds were properly developed, we'd come to the same results, right? The Rambam seems to think that there wouldn't be disagreement. Yeah, surprise. But you'll see the Ramban, I think the Ramban school is the school that's going to go in for this really other view about the just fundamental indeterminacy in the content of revelation itself, which is really different from the two views. And this is, I think, what Yale is saying, that the Rambam shares a certain fundamental view with the Gaonim here. Yeah, good point. Okay, so let's move on to the third view, unless there's anybody else have a comment on this part of the discussion. So if there are no comments in this part of the discussion, we'll move on to the third view. Okay, good. And this is the view that comes out of the base medrash of the Ramban. And I think we're going to go for another 13 minutes, so say we'll just bring the whole shiur to an hour and a half. Even though it's, you know, everyone's home in the luxury of their own trappings, so like no one's stuck in a shiur that they don't want to be stuck in. So
13 minutes with 13 midos, plus 30 midos.
There you go.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me? Just one general question. The whole principle that when Mashiach comes, the halacha will reverse back to Beit Shammai. In other words, halacha will be to Beit Shammai, not to Beit Hillel.
Yeah.
And there's also a midrash of Moshe Rabbeinu coming down to a shir of Rabbi Akiva, and he had no clue what was going on, and then, you know, when someone quoted, you know, saying that this is the halacha Moshe M'Sinai, he felt better, whatever. The point is that, you know, all these opinions that say this is wrong and this is right, and obviously there is an opinion saying it's really right, but it's not the right time.
Yeah, I don't think that that's a problem for these views, because, you know, as we saw, there always is going to have to be a decision procedure for how to rule. And, you know, that if that changes from Acharei Rabim to Acharei some other view at some point, I think that's okay. I don't think it does violence to, you know, any of the theories that we've seen right now. Although you're right that it does show that even the decision procedure rules can change over time, which is an interesting point. But let's see the third view in the Rishonim. This is what comes out of the Beis Medrash of the Ramban. You could see here, this is Ramban is the first to say it in Dvarim Parakid Zion. This is on the Pasuk of Lo Sasor Ben Adavar Asher Yagidu Lecha. As the Torah says, you know, if you have Ki Yipale Mimcha Davar LaMishpat, if there's some uncertainty about the Halacha, The Kamta Ve'Alisa La'Makom Asher Yivchar Hashem Lokach Bo, you should go up to the Beis HaMikdash. You'll come to the Kohanim. You'll come to the Hashofet Asher Yiyah Bayamim Ahim. You'll come to the judge of your time. You should do according to what they tell you to do. V'atzis Al Pi Adavar Asher Yagidu Lecha. Al Pi HaTorah Asher Yorucha Ve'Al HaMishpat Asher Yom Lecha Ta'aseh Lo Sasem Nadavar Asher Yagidu Lecha Yemin Usmol. You shouldn't deviate from the word that they tell you to do. So the Ramban here says, interpreting this idea of Lo Sasur, he says, here, you should follow their decision. Afilu tachsho belibcha shehem toim, even if you think that the bezdin there is wrong. And you shouldn't say, v'al tomar eich ochal hachelev hagomer hazeh o'aharog ha'ish hanaki hazeh. You shouldn't second-guess their decision. Aval tomar, but you should say to yourself, kach tziva osi ha'adon ha'mitzaveh al ha'mitzvos, the God who commanded me on the mitzvos commanded, she'ese b'chol mitzvosav k'chol asher yoruni, ha'omdim lefano b'makam asher yivchar. I should always follow the instructions of the high court in Yerushalayim. V'al mashma'us daitam nasan li ha'torah afilu yitu. And he gives me the Torah, or he gives us the Torah, in accordance with their interpretation. V'al mashma'us daitam nasan li ha'torah afilu yitu. The Ramban has another formulation about this. He says, Hatzorach b'mitzvah hazos gadol me'od. There's real utility in this mitzvah. Ki ha'torah nitzna lanu b'chsav. The Torah was written down. And it's known that people won't all agree when it comes to interpretation. Or maybe this is like Howard's comment and Billy's comment earlier, and new situations that will arise, right? Lo yishtavu hadeos b'chol advarim hanoladim. People won't agree on all the new applications. And what's going to happen is v'hine yarbu hamachlokes v'tasa ha'torah kama toros. And you could have all these different views, and it's going to look like there's lots of different toros. So therefore, chatach lanu hakasav hadin shenishma lebezen hagadol omed lefnei Hashem. We're supposed to follow the bezen hagadols to avoid this problem. Bechol ma sheyomru lanu beferish haTorah, and anything that they say in interpreting the Torah, bein shekiblu perusho aid mi pi aid umosha mi pi agvura, whether this is something they claim to be a tradition that they received person from person, going back to Moshe, o sheyomru kein lefi mashmos hamikra o kavanasa, or whether they're saying this is our best interpretation of the reading of the pasuk or its intent. Why? And here's the crucial line: ki al hadas shelahem hu nosein lanu or nosein lahem haTorah, because the Torah was given to be interpreted or contingent upon their interpretation of this. So some people interpret the Ramban here as saying, and I think this seems to be correct, that any indeterminacy in the reading of the Torah, or even if it's not indeterminate, just the way the law is supposed to be, is just in accordance with their interpretation of it. So there is, let's say, no halachic fact of the matter separate from the way that the Bezen HaGadol Yerushalayim interprets it. Al hadash shelahem hu nosein lahem haTorah. And again, al mashmo is daitam nosan li haTorah afilu yitu. The Ramban has another formulation of this idea in his Hasagos to the Rambam on Sefer HaMitzvos. He says, the Torah tells us, shenishma lebezen HaGadol b'chol ma sheyomru, bein shekiblu perusha mimenu, O sheyomru kemi mashmos haTorah v'kavanasa lefi daitam, ki al hamashmos shelahem hu mitzave v'nosein haTorah. Because God commands and gives the Torah in accordance with their interpretation. This is a really strong view that it's almost like the Torah itself can be indeterminate. And it's made precise, or it's determined, its meaning is fully determined by these interpretations of the Bezen HaGadol. The Ramban, I see Marty has a question, let me just... The Ramban, in his Perish al HaTorah, says this is the idea that... this is the story that happened in Rosh Hashanah Chaf Hei Amid Aleph, this Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah. also a very famous Mishnah on Chav Dalet Amud Beis. The Mishnah there tells the story about Kiddush HaChodesh. There were Edim who testified about when Rosh Chodesh was, and there was Machlokes about whether to accept their testimony. So Rabbi Gamliel and Yavne accepted their testimony, but Rabbi Yoshua thought that the testimony shouldn't be accepted. And it turns out that that would lead to different days of when Rosh Chodesh was, and therefore when Yom Kippur was. And so Rabbi Gamliel, I guess, who was the Beis Din, told Rabbi Yoshua, Gozreini alecha shetavo etzli v'maklecha v'mosecha b'yom ha-kippurim shechal yos b'chushbenecha, b'cheshbonecha. Rabbi Gamliel said, look, I think that today is not Yom Kippur, but I want you, out of deference to me, to travel and violate Yom Kippur on the day that turns out to be Yom Kippur according to your interpretation of Kiddush HaChodesh. And in first draw, Rabbi Yoshua was very hesitant to do this. After all, according to his count, it was Yom Kippur, and he can't be mechalal it. But ultimately, he said, I should follow Rabbi Gamliel. Shenemar ele moadei Hashem mikrai kodesh asher tikrosam bein bizmanan bein shelo bizmanan ein li moados ele elu. The idea is that the Beis Din, I guess the authority that's invested or that's authoritative in deciding these matters of Jewish law, their interpretation is dispositive. That's fully decisive as to what the law is. And therefore, he ended up traveling to him even on the day that he thought was his own Rosh, was his own Yom Kippur. And so the Rambam points to this Gemara to say, this captures the idea that the right meaning, in some sense, is just constituted by the interpretation of the Beis Din HaGadol. I saw we had a question from Marty, and then I just want to get two other formulations about this from the Talmidim of the Ramban, how they explain this idea. Go for it, Marty.
Yeah, I was going to say that, you know, this theory puts so much primacy in the Beis Din that, A, whatever Beis Din decides is really a d'oraisa, at least k'chol asher yeruchah d'oraisa, but maybe even the halacha itself is d'oraisa. And secondly, makes you wonder why there's a concept of carbon hell and davar.
Yes.
It doesn't matter if they were wrong. That's what they decided the halacha was, why they bring a carbon, that they made a mistake.
Yeah.
They didn't make a mistake. What they said was the halacha is the halacha.
Right. So I think what you're pointing out is an important qualification. Just to flesh out a little further, right, there is a whole Masechta in Horios that talks about what happens when the Beis Din HaGadol makes a mistake. I guess, you're right, I think that is a really good challenge to the Ramban's idea here. I guess you would have to say something like, they could recognize their own mistake in some way, you know. And then once they realize their own mistake, it becomes a mistake. Or maybe the Ramban thinks that their interpretation is limited. Meaning he acknowledges that their interpretation is decisive, like within certain boundaries, but maybe there are some things that would be so egregious that even their interpretation can't constitute the rightful meaning of the text. I'm not sure, but I think that's going to be an important qualification to the Ramban's theory.
And the people who didn't listen to their psak because they thought they were wrong, what's their, in truth, what are they chayav for?
Yeah, right. So that's the whole sugya in Horios about Azakin Mamre and you know, who's allowed to disagree with them. Yeah, those are really important qualifications to this idea of the Ramban. But you see, the Ramban's formulation is very radical, right?
Right.
Yeah.
It's extreme.
Yeah, very extreme. But look here, I want to show you these two Talmidim of the Ramban's Beis Medrash run with this idea. Both the Ritva and the Ran, and that's really what we're gonna. Those would be the last views that we're going to see, but they're in the Ramban's camp. So the Ritva here is commenting on a Gemara in Erevin, Daf Yud Gimel Amud Beis. So a bit of a cryptic Gemara. The Gemara here says that Amar Rabbi Acha Bar Chanina Galiv Yedua Lefnei Misha Amar V'Haya HaOlam She'ein B'Dorosh Rabbi Meir Kamoso. There's nobody in Rabbi Meir's generation who's as big a Talmid Chacham as he is. Why did they not therefore follow a mayor's view? Because it's very hard for them, for his peers, to understand the reasons that he was giving for all his psakim. al tahar tame umar lopanim. It's like he would say that something was tahar, tame was tahar, and he would, you know, argue reasons to support his view, and he would, you know, and say that something that was tahar, that it was tame, and give reasons for his view. So it seems like he was almost like a contrarian. He was almost coming out on the opposite view of everybody else, and that's why nobody could understand exactly his position, so they didn't follow him in deciding the halakha. The Gemara then says, Amar Yevam Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Meir had a Talmud, whose name was Sumchus, Shehaya Omer, Al-Kol Davar V'Davar Shel Tuma, Arbaim V'Shmona Tamei Tuma, Al-Kol Davar V'Davar Shel Tara, Arbaim V'Shmona Tamei Tara. You know, he would give like these... they would give these like multiple reasons for viewing something as tar, and something as tame. And this sounds like the Gemara here then goes on and says, Talmud vase kaya biyavne, shahaya mitahir as asheret b'mea b'chamishim tamim. There was this Talmud in Yavne who would always, you know, he'd offer reasons for being mitahir sharets. So the Gemara itself is a little cryptic. The Gemara concludes with this statement from Abba Bar Shmuel, Abba B'Shem Shmuel. You know, B'Shama and B'Shil had all these disagreements. Hillel would say that halacha is kimosenu. Halal omr halacha kimosenu. Halal omr halacha kimosenu. Each side would say that we have the right halacha interpretation. So this is a very famous Gemara that seems to say, look, both sides are right. But nevertheless, the halacha follows Beis Hillel. So the question is, what's that supposed to mean? And notice that this follows on the heels of that discussion in the Gemara that Rabbi Meir would seem to find reasons to say something was tahar was tameh, and reasons to say that something is tameh is tahar. So how do we make sense of this? So the Ritva commenting on this Gemara offers a very famous explanation. And he says, Eilu beilu divrei kim chayim. Shalu Rabbanei Tzarfas, Heich Efshar Shayu Shneim Divrei Elokim Chayim Vizeh Oser Vizeh Matir. Right? How could both sides be right? There's got to be a fact of the matter as to what was said at Sinai. So Vitirtsu Ki Kishaala Moshe Lamaro Makavel Torah Hiru Lo Al Kol Davar V'Davar Mem Tes Panim L'Iser U'Mem Tes Panim L'Hetar. You know, Moshe went up to Har Sinai and he got the Torah. The Torah wasn't given to him as a here's the rule in this case, here's the rule in that case, here's the rule in this case. It was given to him in a more complex and more indeterminate way. It was given to him with 49 reasons to be metame in one case and 49 reasons to be metame in the same case. So it was given, you might say, as a system of principles, almost conflicting principles, and the legal decision would be a function of how you applied the principles, how you interpreted the principles, what kind of weight you gave to one principle over another principle, how one principle defeats or attenuates a different principle. So it wasn't given as a system of normative rules of the upshot of each case. It was given rather as this conflicting set of principles that need to be applied. Vishal LaKadosh Baruch Hu alzeh, Moshe was perplexed by this. How's the system supposed to work? The Amar Sheyeheze Maser Lechachme Yisrael Shebechol Dor V'Dor V'Yia Hachra Kimosam. And he says, oh, then how to decide was just handed over to the Chachme Yisrael of every generation to decide the halacha according to their understanding, according to their application of it. And of course, Harold, you know, wants to know, well, who exactly are these Chachme Yisrael? And I think that's a tricky question. It seems like at one point it was the Bezen Hagadol. But at least in the Ritva's view, he's saying that this kind of indeterminacy and disagreement is just a fundamental feature of the way the Torah was given at Sinai. Let me get the last member of the Ramban's Beis Medrash out. Let me get Danny's comment first. Let's see, Danny, you have a hand up.
It sort of raises the same question of how can there be a Masechas Horios if they just need to apply whichever one they're going to apply based on having options on both sides.
Yeah, it's a good point. How do you ever have these toe cases? I wonder if, again, you'd have to say that there's some limitation on this, or it's only limited by, like, the Sanhedrin's later recognition. So, like, if the Sanhedrin later recognizes that earlier they made a mistake, so their later interpretation has to somehow undermine their earlier one, making it a mistake and requiring some sort of some sort of tshuva and kapara for it.
But what is a mistake? What is a mistake if it's masr lechachmei Yisrael? How is there even a possibility of a mistake? Whatever they say is the din.
Well, what if let's say on day one they thought the din is one way, and then on day two they say, oh, you know what? That same deliberative body says, oh, we made a mistake, and the halacha is reversed. So arguably you could say that constitutes a mistake. What do you think?
That's just changing their mind.
Right, you're saying it shouldn't be a mistake, right? But I don't know. I could hear the argument that would constitute an error, because in their minds it's an error, right? So they get to determine now that their earlier decision was an error and therefore requires kapara for the decision. I know it's not an elegant answer, but I think that's what you'd have to say along these lines. What do you think, Danny?
I don't know. I like the kasha more, which is how do we deal with, you know, Helen Dover
and Horios.
You know, Horios.
Yeah.
In this world where we're giving so much power to whatever the Chachamim say.
Yeah. Let's take David and then Yaakov, just to, you know, give kibud to the Av before the Ben.
I was just going to address Danny's question. Not so different than what you're saying, but why can't it just be, I mean, they have mentas panel, the Isra mentas panel, the Heter. There are certain legitimate ways to get to Isra and Heter, but there's, you know, and not the 49 literal, but there's 1,000 ways to erroneously get to a panel, the Heter, and there's 49 legitimate ways to do it. I mean, there's plenty of like, dumb mistakes people can make all the time that are not like that don't get the legitimacy of one of these, you know, multiple pathways to truth. So there can easily be mistakes that are outside of the realm of their appropriate decision making processes.
Yeah, I hear that. Danny.
So they were given 49 options, but instead they chose option 51, which is out of bounds.
Yeah, I don't mean literally 49, but there's sophisticated, you know, a meticulous following of rigorous principles, and then there's logical lapses and other kind of errors that could be made that are outside the bound of, like, the appropriate, they had to have a lot of...
So it's a corrupt process.
What's that?
So it would be a corrupt process.
Not morally corrupt, but intellectually corrupt, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a nice way of putting it. So David's suggestion is, yeah, there are memtes panim, but there's got to be a judicially correct way of arriving at those different answers. It doesn't mean that any answer goes. And so the parhelm davar shel tzibur cases are where, like, the procedures or the reasons that the procedure that was used or the reasons that were appealed to were not within the bounds of legitimate reasons or the right procedure for getting there. Is that your answer, David?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a nice response. Danny, are you somewhat satisfied for now?
Yeah, it seems interesting for now.
Yeah. And of course, like, they, you know, Harold will push us and say, okay, well, what are those legitimate procedures, right? But yeah, it's a really, really interesting point. Yaakov, you want to give a comment for us?
Yeah, I was going to say very similar to my father, that it could be a logical misstep, or they could have based their decision on a misunderstanding of the metzius of the case.
Yeah.
Russia, they shouldn't have.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Are you guys collaborating over there, or there's no collaboration on this?
We're in different parts of the house.
Okay, fine, fair enough. Good. So Yaakov, it's good to have you. So let's get to the Drasha Saran. You see, the Ran is also a member of the Ramban's base medrash. And you can see the Ritva is working within the Ramban's framework. You'll see the Ran is also working within that framework. This is the last source that we'll really see today. We'll see one comment on it, and then with that we'll conclude. So the Ran in Drasha Zion says that there's a Gemara, he quotes the Gemara in Chagiga that we saw earlier in the Shir. Bali Asufos, that the Torah is learned in groups. Elo Tamidei Chachamim Sheyoshvin Asufos Ve'oskin B'Torah. Halal Metamin, Halal Metarin. Some people are Metame, some people are Metaher, some are Posel, some are Machshir, some are Oser, some are Matir. And you might think, you know, how could I learn Torah? Isn't it all supposed to be from the same source? So the Ramban says, yeah, this is a real problem. This is the Ran, sorry. The Ran says, Zeha inyan sarech iyan. Eich nomar sheshtei kitos hamechalkos namr lemoshe mipiagvura. right? How could you say that? Two groups who disagree that both were said to Moshe at Har Sinai. Be'emes, she'echad mishnei hadeos amiti, v'hasheni hipucho. Right, in truth, one of them's got to be right, and the other one's got to be the opposite of right, meaning false. Ve'ech nomar she'yachza mipi Hashem davar bilti emes, bilti amiti. How could we say that, the non-true thing is divine in the same way that the true thing is divine? So the Ramban says, ha'inyan kachu, this is the answer, inyan kenu, she'davar yedua she'kol ha'torah she'bechsav u'bal peh nimsera le'moshe. Okay, all of Torah Shebal Peh and all of Torah Shebechsav was given to Moshe Rabbeinu, etc., including Dikduke Sofrim. What are Dikduke Sofrim? He says, Heim HaMachlokes V'chiluke HaSvaro Shebein Chachmei Yisrael. So even disagreements were given over to Moshe. And the way that arises is as follows. V'chulon Limda Moshe Mipiagvura Belo Hachra. Kol machlokes u'machlokes bifrat. It's like God gave over to Moshe the disagreements, the two different sides to seeing a certain halacha. Aval masar lo klal, sorry, masar lo klal asher bo yodea ha'emes v'hu achrei rabim lahatos. So similar to the Ritva's theory, just here it's a little simpler, God basically gave Moshe the two different positions. And he said the way you should adjudicate between these two positions is through following the rov. Uchsherabu hamachlokos bein hachachamim im hayu yachid etzal rabim hayu kovin halacha kedivrei hamerubim. Ve'im rabim etzal rabim o yachid etzal yachid kefi hanira lechachmei hador hahu. If there's no clear majority or clear minority, then sometimes it'll be a matter of, what the chachamim of that generation, in every generation, maybe will take a stand on this question differently. Harei shenitan reshus lechachmei hadoros lahachriya b'machlokes hachachamim hanira lehem. Va'afim yu hakidumim mehem gedolim mehem berabim mehem. V'nitztaveinu lelich achar haskamasan hein sheyaskimu le'emes o lehipucho. Right, so we're commanded to follow the decisions of each generation, regardless of whether yaskimu le'emes o lehipucha. Kind of an interesting view where he seems to want to defend that there is, one correct view, but he also wants to say that we're supposed to follow the haskama of how to interpret it, regardless of what the quote-unquote right answer might be. He says here at the end of his piece, commenting on that Gemara of Tanur Shel Achnoi, with machlokes about the oven, he says, "She'achar she'sichlam note l'tame." Since the chachamim were persuaded that the oven is tame, afal pi shehayu yodim shehayu maskibin hepech min emes. Even though all the divine signs followed Rebbe Eliezer to say that Rebbe Eliezer was right, still lo ratzu l'tahir. The chachamim didn't agree. V'hayu ovrin al divrei torim hayu mitarin. And in fact, they would have actually been violating the Torah's rules for how to decide cases had they been mitaher, kivan shesichlam note letame, because their minds, their intuition said that the oven's got to be tame. Shehachra nimsra lechach meadoros v'asher yaskimu heim hu asher tzivav Hashem, and the right procedure for normative halacha is to follow the hachra that was given to these different scholars of the generations. So I think you really have a unified view amongst these three members of the Ramban school, in different degrees, in different shades, that really speak to the idea of the transmission at Sinai as given not as just a system of upshot answers to different cases, but as like conflicting rules that will be applied differently, the right meaning of which is to be determined by some deliberative process, to be defined by Rove, or in the Ron's case, also each generation might take a different stand on these questions. But these are the three main views that I wanted to survey today. The theory of the Gaonim, that really it seems like everything was given at Sinai, and halachic disagreement comes about through disruptions of the Mesorah. They were basing themselves a lot in that Gemara in Shabbos, in Sanhedrin, And the letter of Shri Ragon is explicit that this had to do with the disruption of the institutions of Jewish law, like the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash and then the destruction of Beitar. In the Rambam's idea, the Rambam had a different theory. The Rambam said much less was given at Sinai. It's only those undisputed principles were given at Sinai. He thought there could be no disruption, there are no problems in the transmission of those core ideas. Halachic disagreement comes about through the Yud Gimel Midos and applying these halachos, but even then, the Rambam thought if everyone studied them properly and had perfect intellects, we'd get to the same answer. There wouldn't be disagreement. So disagreement comes about through imperfect application of the Yud Gimel Midos. And then we have the Ramban school, and I think this is what David was saying, you know, who's that? You know, does anybody take this idea of Eilu Beilu seriously? You have the Ramban, the Ritva, and the Ran, who seem to say that there was some fundamental indeterminacy with respect to at least some of the content that was given at Sinai, with the prescription that the indeterminacy should be resolved according to some process. And that's where disagreement comes about. And that's why the Mishnayos are rife with disagreement, and that's why Halacha is rife with disagreement. How do we decide on these cases? That's really a process that gets filtered through the system, I guess, of Psak Halacha, either Rove or every generation decides their cases in a slightly different manner. So let me take a few questions, and then we'll conclude. David has a hand.
Yeah, a question on the school of the Ramban. So once we're within the realm of, call it the 49 appropriate ways, you know, one side says a claw protocol, the other says, you know, another Midash HaTorah Nigun, a Kalvachomer or whatever, Dera Shava. What is sort of the meta of those two sides, which is to say, first of all, assuming that they agree about this Ramban, so they know that each other are just doing two different things that are both legitimate. Like, I'm trying to understand, like, the nature of what they're arguing about if they both know the idea of this Ramban. And further, you mentioned Gorsuch and Kavanaugh. So, like, if according to the Ramban school, what is a member of the Sanhedrin supposed to be doing? What's supposed to be their theory of not constitutional, but of, you know, Midrash Tarna Justice for him interpretation, which is to say, what should motivate when they, which method they apply if both of them are legitimate? Are they just supposed to do which result they want more? Or are they supposed to be trying to get one that's a little more truthy? Like, what are they actually trying to do? What is the exercise that they're engaging in?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. Wouldn't the answer be along the lines that you and Yaakov were developing in response to Danny?
Yeah. I don't think so, because I'm sort of asking the opposite question now, because Yaakov and I believe we're saying that there's a certain scope of approaches that are legitimate, and then there's ones that are beyond the pale. But now my question is, my question is zeroing in on the ones that are legitimate, not the ones that are beyond the pale, but the ones that are okay, that don't suffer from a simple error in either Metzius or in logic, but are ones that have the endorsement of the system of Yud Gimel Midosh HaTorah and Justice that does apply properly. But I'm asking, once you have those choices, whether there's 49 or 20 or 13, what motivates your choice of one versus the other?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. I mean, Halacha is really silent here on, like, prescriptions for the members of a Sanhedrin HaGadol for how they're supposed to decide these cases, right?
Yeah.
And so what does the Ramban's theory have to say about that? I'd have to think about that a little more. You know, I think we'd have to, you know, this is that question that, you know, the Ksos, I don't know if Mitch is still on here. The questions like the Ksos talks about in his Hakdama to the Ksos Achoshen, like, you know, how are we supposed to, like, figure out what the halachic rules are supposed to be? You know, and he says, he kind of, it's interesting. Well, yeah, I guess we could look at it and see what his answer is. But the short answer for now is that the Ramban doesn't really give us an answer. If you look afterwards, you could look at this discussion, this Tshuva of Ramosha, the Ramosha's Hakdama to Igros Moshe. I have it here on page 14. Where, you know, yeah, he just, you know, they talk about by analogy, you know, using your mind to apply the principles in the best way possible. But if you're saying that there's clear, like, you'd get a different answer by applying different halachic principles, how do you know which principle to apply? I guess you would say that there's got to be a principle that seems the most correct or the most analogous, or given the way the Chachamim use these principles in other situations, this would be the best way to approach it.
Yeah, and that does seem to be the simple understanding of how machlokas, like literal machlokas, is like micro machlokas happen in Shas, because usually when there's a machlokas, it doesn't just say, oh, okay, we're both happy, we disagree. It's always like, why didn't he say like him? Why didn't he say like him? It sounds like they actually each think that the other one is mistaken. They aren't each thinking like the Ramban with respect to their bar plukta, so to speak.
Yeah, it's a good point. So I don't know exactly what principles or how you would say which principle. I guess lots of times you see when people argue, they think that there is a right answer based off what they take to be the best principle that can be applied. But let me take a look back at the Ketosis Hakdama and see like if he has anything interesting to say about it. The Ramban himself is, and his base matter is, just somewhat silent on it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point. Any other questions here before we say goodbye? Any other comments or thoughts on the different schools here? Okay, so I'm happy to email out the source sheet. There are a few other sources here that it might be interesting to take a look at yourself. Let me just point you to them. I'm not going to read through them now, but if you want to take a look on your own. Rav Moshe and his Akdama to Igros Moshe has some really interesting statements about, how could I be a posek? It's so hard to figure out what the halachically right answer is. And so basically he says that, you have to do your best to figure out the cases. And he says, even if you get the answer that's like wrong klape shmaya, the right answer is psak, and psak is the one that you arrive at using your mind in the clearest and best way. I'll just read you one quote from it. He says, Laniyas daiti b'zeh shehayu rashayin u'muchuyavin chach mi'adoros ha'achronin lahoros, af shelo hayu nechshavin higia lahoros b'doros chach mi'agemara, sheyesh vaday lochosh ulay lo kivnu amitas hadin, kefi shehu ha'emes, klape shmaya. You know, of course, he says today, maybe, you know, people like me would not have been considered roi to paskin in earlier generations, because maybe we won't get to the true din as it actually is klape shmaya. Aval ha'emes lohora kvar nemar lo bashamayim hi, ela kefisha nira lehachacham achare she'ien karoi levarer ha'halocha b'shas uva poskim, kvi kocho b'koved rosh uveyira me'ashem yisparach. So he says, yeah, even if the posek's not going to get to the true din as it is klape shmaya, still, like, the right psak is the one that he arrives at, you know, with this deliberative process of using, you know, serious intellectual rigor and analysis of the past precedent, etc. If using that method, he arrives at a certain psak, that is considered the MS according to Hora, and he's obligated to paskin that way. Af im be'etzem galya klape shmaya she'eno kena perush. Even if, like, objectively klape shmaya, it's not true. This is like an interesting distinction that Rav Moshe seems to open up between what's considered the MS for Psak and what might be the objectively true interpretation of the Torah. I also want to just point out the Chavos Yair in Siman Kuf Tzadi Beis has an objection to the Ramban school theory. And he says, the Ritva will tell you that the Torah... he has two objections to the Ritva Ramban Ram theory. He says, they say that the Torah was given in this indeterminate way. And, there's no clear answer that was given. And the true answer is based off how the Beis Din interprets it. So he has a different objection from Danny and David's objection about the Horios. He says, Davar zet tamua, ki ma yoil davar shebe emes tame, umikocho tis orer klipa vituma visitra uchra, he's thinking there's like an objective reality about things that are tamei from the Torah's perspective. And so the mere fact that some chachamim say it's tahar is not going to change its metaphysical status. He says, "Uma yoil haskama sarofe ba'amra sam mavesh shehu sam chayim." He says, if doctors all get together and say that some poison is medicine, it's not going to turn the poison into medicine. So he thinks that there's something about the ontological nature of halacha that is incompatible with the Ritva's theory, right? If like there's an objective reality as to the effects of tumah and tara, consensus of rabbis saying to the contrary is not going to change that. He does entertain an answer. He says, oh, maybe you can say that, maybe the metaphysical reality itself is contingent on how the chachamim view it. He says, "V'nomar she'ein tigbores hatuma v'aklipa mikol negiya v'achilo bia, v'chol ma'isa nitav rak mitzad shehu rav in nimas be'enei Hashem. V'chiyomar Hashem she'yiya biyad abezdin linok bo kirtzonam lo yazeg muma." He's like, oh, maybe there's some contingency here that even like the effects of tuma are only bad if they're... if the Bezin thinks they're bad, but if the Bezin says they're okay, then maybe like the effects of the Tumah are vitiated. Then he has a second objection. He just thinks it's strange that he says, I don't understand why the Ritva thinks that the Torah was given in this indecisive way with reasons to one side and reasons to the other side. He says, Ma me'od zar lomar shelo amra kodesh baruch hu das va'amiti v'ritzono yisbarach hein bahalacha o b'fer shaksuvim. He says, why in the world would the Ribbono Shel Olam give the Torah in a way where he's not telling you just what the right answer is? He says, it's strange. If there's a right answer, let him give the right answer. So you see that Chavos Yair is working within this view that there is an objectively true answer, and he just thinks it's strange that the Ramban and the Ritva think that it will be masked in some way. I think the Ritva and the Ramban would respond that there probably isn't an objectively correct answer. They're just reasons that cut one way and the other way. But you can take a look at these sources on your own after this year, and I'm happy to email out the source sheet. Okay, well, if anybody has further comments, I'm happy to stay on, but otherwise I want to wish everyone a Chag Kasher V'Sameach, and have a nice Yom Tov, and a meaningful Yom Tov, even if you're observing it in isolation. Chag Kasher V'Sameach. Anybody have, I'm happy to stay on if anybody has comments, but I'm also have, and just email me if you want me to send you the source sheet. Take care. Chag Kasher Sameach, Yael. Chag Kasher Sameach, David. Chag Kasher Sameach, Marty. Chag Kasher Sameach, Danny.
Chag Kasher Sameach.
Everyone else, Chag Kasher Sameach.
Everybody.
Thank you.